It's Monday, December 6th. Every parent wants to take the side of their child, but what if your child has some red flags and a new gun? We start here.
LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught.
For the first time in memory, the parents of an alleged school shooter are charged for their role in the massacre.
They insist that the gun was locked up in their cabinet.
Why prosecutors say they've got a case and why they say these parents went on the run. Crimea was a one-time thing, right?
It's not clear what they can really do.
Ahead of a crucial summit, new concerns that Russia's about to send troops into Ukraine. And President Biden said he'd end a controversial Remain in Mexico policy.
They're actually implementing and expanding it.
And yet today, he's putting it back into place. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. As students around the country begin another school week, parents around the nation are once again confronting the fact they can't be sure their child will not be the victim of a school shooting today. You can be confident, but you can't be sure.
And I texted them both and I was like, there's a shooter at my school. I heard gunshots. I just want you guys to know that I love you.
Last Tuesday, parents in Oxford Township, Michigan, became the latest to have their greatest fears realized as witnesses described a high school sophomore going into a bathroom with a bag on his shoulder and emerging with a pistol in his hand.
Panic-stricken parents were asked to meet here to reunite with their students, or with their children, rather, and some parents never got that reunification.
Well, in the last few days, the attention has turned from the suspect, who is in custody, to the adults around him, including his own parents. ABC's Trevor Ault has been on the scene since this tragic shooting. He's still there now because, Trevor, it appears there's been developments with James and Jennifer Crumley, right? They're now in custody.
That's right, Pat. I mean, over the weekend, it was just nonstop update after update after update. And really, we saw something that America has never seen before. Even with all the school shootings that we've ever had in the past, we've never seen the parents of a suspected school shooter wanted by police.
I want you to put in two perimeters, tight one around that building vehicle.
Police issued a be on the lookout alert for James and Jennifer Crumbley hours after they were charged with involuntary manslaughter, four counts each, which is unprecedented. It has never happened before to our knowledge.
The charges are as follows.
And when those charges were announced by the prosecutor, it was expected that the Crumbleys were going to be arraigned that afternoon, Friday at 4 p.m., but they didn't turn up.
The arrest of the parents, who police say were found hiding in a vacant building in Detroit after having withdrawn $4,000 from an ATM.
Even though their attorneys in their arraignment have said they weren't fleeing, they were simply getting their affairs in order.
The Crumbleys asked for a safe place to stay to avoid death threats and hostility that was surrounding their home.
Prosecutors, though, point to the fact that this couple withdrew $4,000 from an ATM about 15 minutes from the sheriff's office on Friday morning, and then were later found inside that warehouse 45 minutes away in the middle of the night, Brad.
Right. Well, getting your affairs in order by apparently withdrawing a lot of cash. Their son has pleaded not guilty to dozens of counts, but Trevor, I mean, why were these parents of interest to prosecutors in the first place? Like, are the allegations that they're somehow responsible for the shooting, like something they did, or is it about something they did not do, like they didn't do enough to prevent it?
I think it is a little bit of both, according to the prosecutor, Brad. I mean, basically what the prosecution is alleging is that these parents were so negligent that they directly contributed to the deaths of these four students.
She was just the light of so many people, and this is unimaginable. This is unmanageable.
While the shooter was the one who entered the high school and pulled the trigger, there are other individuals who contributed to the events on November 30th, and it's my intention to hold them accountable as well.
Let me first get into what the prosecutors say they did.
James Crumbley purchased a Sig Sauer 9mm Model SP-2022 from Acme Shooting Goods in Oxford, Michigan.
And they say he bought it specifically for his son.
A store employee confirms that Ethan Crumbley was present with James at the time of the purchase.
The teenager posted on Instagram that day. He said, "Just got my new beauty today," with a picture of the weapon.
One of Jennifer Crumbley's social media posts on about 11/27/21 read, quote, "Mom and Sunday testing out his new Christmas present."
And according to prosecutors, they kept the weapon unlocked in their bedroom drawer. Then, the next week, on Monday, the day before the shooting, the teenager is reported to have been searching ammunition on his phone. A teacher reported that to authorities, and the school called the parents to tell them that. They say that the parents did not get back to the school.
Thereafter, Jennifer Crumbly exchanged text messages about the incident with her son on that day, stating, quote, LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught.
That's the day before this deadly shooting. And then the day of, a separate teacher reports this teenager for having drawn a picture that appeared to have a gun, a bullet, a person who appeared to be shot twice.
Further down the drawing are the words, quote, my life is useless, end quote. And to the right of that are the words, quote, the world is dead, end quote.
That was then reported to school administrators, to the counselors there. They called in the parents for a meeting this time. It took the parents a bit of time to get there. By the time they did arrive, they answered some questions. They told the parents, you have 48 hours to get your son some counseling. They asked them to take him home. The parents declined.
Both James and Jennifer Crumbly failed to ask their son if he had his gun with him or where his gun was located, and failed to inspect his backpack for the presence of the gun, which he had with him.
And then the kid was sent back to class. And it was hours after that that authorities say he committed a massacre.
This was on the day that he allegedly shoots these students. His parents have already been at the school saying, no, he should stay.
Yes. According to the school, the parents flatly refused to take him home. And where prosecutors also make the point that they say these parents had to know this was a possibility, is what they did after the shooting was reported.
When the news of the active shooter at Oxford High School had been made public, Jennifer Crumbly texted to her son, quote, Ethan, don't do it.
And James Crumbly, when he found out, rushed home, according to authorities, to check to see if his weapon was there. He saw that it was not. He called 911 and said his gun was missing, and he believed his son was the school shooter.
How do the parents respond to these allegations? If they were there on the day and they know that their son's got a gun that he very much considers his, I mean, how do they respond?
Well, their attorney has flatly denied any culpability.
When the prosecution is stating that this child had free access to a gun, that is just absolutely not true.
They say that basically what we've heard so far from authorities and the prosecution are cherry-picked facts, and they're confident that the truth is going to come out. They pleaded not guilty on all of these charges.
The bond for Jennifer Crumbly at $500,000 cash surety, no 10%.
As the prosecutor said that the parents made this weapon freely available to their son and he was dangerous, James Crumbly was shaking his head widely to indicate, no, that is not true. And I need to mention, Brad, a lot of legal experts do say this could be a very difficult case for the prosecutors to prove. Because there isn't a law in Michigan that says, number one, they need to safely secure their weapon away from their child if there's a minor in the home. You'll notice that they're charged with involuntary manslaughter, but they're not charged with any other kind of weapons charges, too. So the prosecution is going to have to prove some kind of extreme negligence here, and we've never seen this charged anywhere else in the country in a mass school shooting, let alone convicted.
Right, and complicated questions when you're talking about whether to involve police in school matters. We just had an entire year where people were discussing whether police should be involved in discipline, whether there are instances when therapists and counselors should really be taking the lead. I think a lot of Americans can agree that police should be involved if there's potential threat to the school, but where you draw that line and when you get officers involved. Trevor Ault, there in Oxford Township, Michigan. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, troops are one thing, battle plans are another. How far Russia is willing to go after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/starthere today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/starthere.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
In recent weeks, we've seen a buildup of troops near the border between Russia and Ukraine. Now, in a normal world, that just means two countries are trying to stick out their chests, saying, don't mess with us. But with Russia, this hits different. In 2014, it wasn't theoretical. Russia literally took over part of their neighbor's country. And over this weekend, the Washington Post reported that U.S. spy agencies are convinced Russia isn't bluffing and could, in fact, be on the verge of invading Ukraine.
They're building up troops, they have supplies, they have medical supplies, and all signs point to a Russian invasion around the first of the year.
ABC's White House correspondent Mary Alice Parks actually spoke to President Biden about this over the weekend. And Mary Alice, first off, is this for real? Like, how likely is it that Russia would straight up invade Ukraine?
We don't know. And the White House has said repeatedly that they can't guess Putin's intentions. But just like you said, they can look back at the very recent history.
Armored Russian vehicles burst through the wall of Crimea's Belbek base today, firing warning shots and throwing sound grenades.
Russian invasion of Ukraine. Russian troops spreading out throughout the strategic Crimean Peninsula.
And we heard that from members of Congress this weekend, too. Both sides of the aisle, we heard congressional leaders say that the threat is serious, that they've seen intelligence reports that have them convinced that the threat is real and needs to be taken seriously, and that there's too much evidence that Putin could do this again since he has done this before.
We must prepare for the worst, not knowing what those intentions are.
So if you're President Biden and the worst is, I guess, an invasion of, you know, our ally and Russia's neighbor, Ukraine.
Yeah.
What do you do about it?
Yeah. So that's what I asked President Biden about.
What is happening in Ukraine and what on the border between Ukraine and Russia? And what are you going to do about it?
I have been in constant contact with our allies in Europe, with the Ukrainians. My Secretary of State and National Security Advisor have been engaged extensively. And what I am doing is putting together what I believe to be will be the most comprehensive and meaningful set of initiatives to make it very, very difficult for Mr. Putin to go ahead and do what people are worried he may do.
He was very careful, very diplomatic in his words, as you can imagine, but he said he's been in constant contact with European allies and that they're working on developing sort of a package of economic initiatives, he mostly pointed to try to deter Russia. But this is where it gets so tricky, Brad, because it's not clear what they can really do. It hasn't seemed like economic sanctions in the past have done much to change the Kremlin's behavior. It's hard. No one imagines some scenario where the United States is sending troops.
Right.
And so what are you talking about? Sending additional military equipment, bigger weaponry, more sophisticated weaponry to help Ukraine's military? Well, that itself could be really risky. Russia could view that as a provocation. So that's what is really hard to figure out right now, is what actually would deter Russia and what options are on the table.
The United States remains unwavering in our support for Ukraine's territorial integrity, its sovereignty, its independence.
For their part, Russia disputes the idea that they are planning some offensive, but they are demanding guarantees that Ukraine is not admitted into NATO. You know, a big part of this is Russia feeling like Ukraine is closer now than ever with the West, and they enjoyed kind of a buffer zone between NATO and Russia, and they're worried that that buffer zone is shrinking.
Yeah, and in the meantime, President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin have a sort of virtual summit slated for tomorrow. We'll see how that works now that there is reporting saying that intelligence services can see a very real path to a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mary Alice Parks in Washington. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
It's a weird day for the Biden administration, not just because of questions about a potential war overseas, but because on our own border, the U.S. is about to take a policy it publicly says it wants to end and expand it further.
As encampments south of the border swell with migrants seeking asylum, activists are sounding off about the reinstatement of the controversial Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy.
ABC's Luke Barr covers Homeland Security and the Justice Department. And Luke, the acronym is MPP, right? Migration Protection Protocols. Everyone here calls it Remain in Mexico, right? Where if you're coming to the U.S. to claim asylum, you got to stay in Mexico until your fate is decided. But now it's back in effect as of today. Like, what changed here?
Yeah, Brad. So, look, the Biden administration has vehemently opposed this policy, even, you know, that in Canada, Biden really went after Trump in one of the debates about this policy. But basically, they got to implement it.
President Biden suspended the policy in January. And in August, a federal judge ordered the administration to reinstate it.
The courts ruled that the way the Biden administration previously attempted to get rid of it.
DHS has appealed that injunction and announced that it intends to issue a second memorandum terminating MPP that intends to address the concerns raised by the courts.
And Brett, later today, they're actually implementing and expanding it. It used to be anybody from Central America, right? But DHS officials told us on a call last week that the policy applies to everybody in the Western Hemisphere.
Does the journey scare you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's worth it?
It's worth it because when you make it to over there, you have to more opportunity to live better, you know?
So on the one hand, you've got Biden administration officials saying, you know, we're vehemently opposed to it. On the other hand, they're expanding it. And I think advocates are really upset about it.
Not only is this a broken campaign promise, this is an incredible disappointment that will put tens of thousands of people in real danger.
And Brad, you know, the Biden administration hasn't really elaborated on why this is expanded for countries all across the Western Hemisphere. But, you know, it could have big ramifications for people trying to claim asylum at the southern border.
But wait, Luke, just so I can wrap my head around this. So the Biden administration says they don't like this policy. They get rid of it. The court says, no, you actually can't get rid of it if you have your migrant detention stuff structured the way you do. But so then, like, why doesn't the Biden administration do what it can to end this thing or, like, completely reimagine it? Like, this wasn't a thing 5 years ago. It doesn't have to be perpetually, does it?
You know, the Biden administration has repeatedly told us, look, the courts are the courts. You have to follow a court-mandated order. But they say, look, once the injunction on the order is lifted, on the policy is lifted, then they will fully attempt to walk back the policy.
Just wondering if you can reflect on how he feels about having now to see this move forward now.
Well, as you noted, Mary, Secretary Mayorkas also and the president have repeatedly said that this program has endemic flaws.
And Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas already has a memo ready to go for when that court injunction is lifted. So they say, look, we don't like the policy. We have steps in place to walk back the policy. But the courts are the courts, Brad.
So this goes into effect later today. The Biden administration will do whatever it can with, you know, between politics and between the law. But what happens to the migrants who actually deal with these protocols? What are the complaints from human rights groups?
So some of the complaints range from, look, there are gangs on the southern border that are preying on all these migrants. There are housing issues. It runs the gamut.
Tenía miedo cuando empezaron.
Were you scared when you started walking north?
Tenía miedo.
Not scared, but now we are hearing people are getting assaulted, kidnapped, so that's when we decided to go back.
The cartels are really prevalent in smuggling humans across the border. The advocates have complained of dangerous conditions for these migrants ever since the policy was put in place in 2019.
This decision makes a really terrible situation even worse because it ensures that migrants, many of whom don't have a fixed address, become easy prey for people who want to extort them or take advantage of them.
But, you know, starting today, Brad, critics are worried that if this injunction continues for a long period of time, more people from the Western Hemisphere trying to get into the United States, waiting for credible claims of asylum in Mexico, they could be put at risk even further than they already are today.
Yeah, to hear the Biden administration talk about this, they talk about, you know, our hands are kind of tied when it comes to the courts. However, advocates point out, You weren't forced to expand this program, and you could have made changes. You just decided not to because you wanted to kind of expedite the next steps of this. But in the meantime, a lot of questions as this goes back into effect today. Luke Barr, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, a huge luxury brand is under fire. We'll give you, let's say, five guesses which one it is. One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing.
All right, December 1st.
All right, hold on. It's one of those little Lego packets. Yes!
Even if you're not religious, there's something super cool about Advent calendars. Those are the little display cases that count down the days until Christmas. I remember growing up, our family got a little cardboard one from the grocery store with chocolates. Every night, you locate the day, you open up the little doors, and ta-da, you get a little chocolate surprise.
And we have a tiny Miss Dior fragrance.
In recent years, brands have made their own upscale Advent calendars.
Day 20 is this. So it is the YSL waterproof pencil.
But perhaps none have been torn apart as thoroughly as Chanel this weekend.
Am I crazy? Absolutely. But I've never seen a Chanel Advent calendar. So
a few days ago, a TikTok user named Elise Harmon excitedly opened her new Chanel calendar on camera. It cost $825.
Well, I guess we'll give them a 10 out of 10 on the packaging front.
The first thing she noticed was how expensive it looks, right? It's shaped like this huge, glittering bottle of perfume. The next thing she noticed was how many items on the inside looked, cheap.
This has to be a joke. This is a joke. Stickers?
The first box she opened contained Chanel stickers, like stickers you'd find at a vending machine. Inside another box...
This is just a, paperweight.
Was a figurine in the shape of a perfume bottle. Not a perfume bottle, like a toy resembling one. Another day surprise, she discovered, was literally just a dust bag, the type of bag you'd use to store some earrings in.
Okay, this is cute.
Now, there were some actual trinkets in here, some hand cream, some lipstick, some nail polish, but nothing resembling anything worth $825. Now, this series of posts got millions of views. Commenters called it the Fire Fest of Advent Calendars. And we should note, Chanel does list the contents on their product page, but obviously, the surprise is part of the fun. And if you are proud enough to list all those items, why would you block someone who's posting about them?
They blocked me. What's not clicking, Chanel? Something's wrong.
That's right. The ending to this Christmas story is that Elise claims she was blocked by Chanel on social media. But hey, at least Scrooge never smelled this good. Is it me, or did all this look suspiciously like the stuff you'd find a company giving out at events throughout the year as swag for free? Chanel has not commented on whether they just went around the office grabbing stuff and tossing it into boxes. Start here tomorrow. Remember, that follow button will get you a new episode every weekday. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.